Welcome to episode number 33 of the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, where Christina and I discuss incorporating alcohol, eating out, and social events into a healthy lifestyle. We discuss how you can track alcohol, how many drinks is reasonable for you and your context, ideas for lower calorie drinking, what to do if you don't want to drink, perceptions about eating out and health, how to track food when out, and general tips for making eating out healthier and easier on your waistline. We even take you through a little bit of time travel throughout the episode, but you won't get it until we get to it. Finally, we discuss a lot about the mental side of incorporating a social life into a truly balanced, healthy lifestyle, how life cycles through phases, and how it's important to always be learning and adapting to find what's the right plan for you. As always, if you like the podcast and you want to support it, all we ask is that you share this episode with a friend, family member, or coworker who would benefit from it. One share can go a really long way and supports our mission to help as many people as possible to live a healthier, sustainable lifestyle. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how this podcast moves up the ranks and becomes accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode, number 33, Alcohol, Eating Out, and Social Events.
Guys, and welcome back to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Christina Lin, and I'm here with my co-host, Marissa Roy. And in today's episode, we're going to be discussing how to track and kind of stay on track with social events and also how to track alcohol.
Yeah, and I feel like today is July 6th, so the 4th of July has just passed.
Christina's like, it's not July yet.
Doing mental math in her head, and I'm like, no, when this comes out, it'll be the 6th. So the July 4th. Wow, we are off to a great start today, and we're just gonna leave it in. But the 4th of July just passed, so obviously one of the biggest party days of the year has just passed, so not the best timing, but it's still summer and there's still a lot of social events, there's still a lot of eating out, drinking, partying going on, and we know that you guys are fitness interested people, meaning that you want to figure out how can you stay on track with all of this stuff going on and still enjoy yourself. I mean, some of you may not have gotten to that point of realizing that you can enjoy yourself while doing these things, but it is possible and we will show you how. So we are recording this a week before though. So Christina, do you have any fun plans for the 4th?
So I think we're going to have some people over to the house and just kind of play a little bit low key. I think that's actually what we did last year too. But nice. You're going down to North Carolina, right?
Yeah, so Core Nutritionals just moved down to North Carolina to their new warehouse. So they're all getting settled in and we're going to be going down for the weekend and just hanging out with them. And I'm super excited for it because they're right by Lake Norman. And so they actually rented some kayaks. We're going to be going out on the water. If it doesn't rain, I hope it doesn't rain. the chance of rain there is lower than it is where I live in Virginia. So we'll see. But super excited and, kind of low key, but also kind of, going out of our way to be with friends and have a good time. So I'm excited. And hopefully everyone listening also had a good 4th as well.
This is a weird episode because we're talking like it's the future, but then we're talking about what we're going to be doing in the past, which is the future for us.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like we said like 3 weeks ago, like, oh, we're now going to be on a regular recording schedule, like back to just our weekly times. But I still feel like every time we get on right now, we're like kind of getting back to it after being off for a little bit. So, I mean, after this week,
hence the awkward intro of today's episode.
Yeah. So if we sound rusty, it's because we are. No, but like after this week, I think we'll be on a much more regular recording schedule for sure. At least I know. And I was just saying off air to Christina, like I don't have travel planned from the moment I get back from North Carolina until maybe late August. And like, I could not be happier. Like, I'm so ready for just boring day to day for 2 months straight.
Yeah, you've been traveling quite a bit. I haven't traveled I guess recently, but I just had my dad and stepmom stay with me for a week. So I felt very much out of my routine because there were things that I weren't doing that I normally do. So today is my first full day of being back and it feels so good.
I hear you. So yeah, let's get into it. So let's start with, why don't we just start with like the basics of tracking alcohol and tracking food when you're out. Like obviously we'll go over how to manage just doing things in moderation without tracking, because you might be listening to this and you might still not track macros or understand that whole world of things. But let's say you're counting calories or you're counting macros and you want to know, how do I fit alcohol and how do I fit eating out into my lifestyle and actually make it work? So do you want to take one and I'll take the other?
Sure. Yeah, so
which one do you want to do?
I guess we can talk about tracking alcohol. So typically when we tell our clients to track something, I feel like one of the easiest things you can do is scan a label. And, you know, you scan a food label that just pops right up into your MyFitnessPal and you can go from there. However, when you are tracking alcohol, that is not always the case, because I feel like if you've ever done this before, you scan a label and it'll come up with like a glass of wine, 120 calories, and it says it's 3 carbs. And so I'll see the same thing with my clients. If they have a beer, it's like, you know, 10 carbs for 3 beers. And, you know, they think that they're doing the right thing because they're scanning the label and that's what they've done with other food labels in the past. However, the labels do not account for the alcohol content that is in the drink. And so instead of trying to do the math, because there is a lot of math, because alcohol is 7 calories per gram. And so instead of doing that, I think it's just a lot easier to just take the calories. So again, it very easy if you do, like let's say your drink is 100 calories, just divide by 4, and that's how many grams of carbs are in that drink. And then you're still accounting for the calories. And so I feel like that's the easiest method to go by for me. And then let's say, for example, you have a higher fat percentage, maybe you have a lot more fats that you can work with. You can take 100, divide by 9, and that's how many fats that you can use to track that drink. So that's kind of an easy method for me, and that's what I typically tell my clients to utilize when they're tracking alcohol, rather than scanning the label, because that is just not accurate whatsoever.
Right, right. And I have so much relief because you took alcohol, and I had just like right before this, I was recording like 2 or 3 videos for clients explaining this, how to track alcohol. And I was like, I hope she does this one because I'm kind of tired of running through it. But yeah. No, but I do think that scanning the label is a good idea to get the calorie amount.
Right.
Right. Right. So like you have to know what you're actually taking from your diet. So I do want to kind of elaborate a little bit on the why behind why. Okay. So why do we take it from carbs and fats? Why can't we take it from protein? And also like, what is the reasoning behind that? So essentially, first of all, alcohol is technically a toxin. Our body does not like it. It wants to get it out. And so it is a different molecule, digests differently. If you want to get technical with it, it digests most similarly to fat, but like ultimately when we're just trying to account for the calories from it, it really doesn't matter. So when you drink alcohol, your body is going to prioritize digesting the alcohol first before any of the other food. So the calories from the alcohol do count towards energy, and we do use it towards energy. So we do have to take it from some part of our daily allotment if we don't want to be going over our total daily intake, because at the end of the day, it does usually come down to calories in versus calories out. And we don't want to take from protein because alcohol also has the effect of down-regulating our muscle protein synthesis, aka our muscle recovery. And so if you drink, say, after a really hard workout, even if it's just one drink, you actually might get more sore the next day or have more DOMS, you know, the day after, just because you had an alcoholic beverage and it impaired your recovery. So we don't take from protein because protein helps our recovery. So as much as we can offset that effect, we will. But we have to take from carbs and or fat. So like personally, one thing you didn't say that I really like to do is like pretty much the only thing I'll drink socially is like a Truly or a White Claw. I'm not like a light beer drinker at parties. I'm definitely a craft beer person though. But if it's 100 calorie Truly, say, I like to do half and half. So I don't really like to take a big chunk out of my carbs or a big chunk out of my fat. So if I'm just having one or two, I'll do, instead of 25 carbs or 11 fat, which is the 100 calories divided by 4 and 9 respectively, I'll do 5.5 fat and 12.5 carbs for that one drink. And that's also 100 calories. And then that way I'm kind of evenly taking from my target. So that's another like hack that I like to do with the drinks.
Yeah. So I like to say just carbs or just fats, because I feel like for those who are beginning their tracking journey, I think it's just a little bit easier. But if you are that more intermediate and you've been tracking for a while and you understand the math behind it, definitely do what you said. But yeah, I think it's important to not take away from protein, even though that might be what
that might be what you want to do.
Yeah, technically, I guess it's better than like not tracking at all or like binge drinking. all you're eating the rest of the day is like carbs and fat. And like, while that's super fun, we do need to make sure that we prioritize protein.
Right. So this is all in the context of you're trying to still hit these goals that you have with muscle building or fat loss or something, with alcohol included in moderation. So like, you know, if you don't have goals about it, that all can go out the window. That's right. Fine. Right. But this is in that context. Yeah. Right.
And I think another thing when it comes to alcohol, so I will have clients, you know, first that come to me and they're like, can I drink alcohol? And, you know, my response to them is I never put anything off limits, whether it's cookies, ice cream, alcohol. I won't say that you can't have it, because generally what tends to happen is if you say you can't have it, that's all they want. That's all they think about. So I tell them, you know, yes, you can have it. And it's almost kind of like, oh, okay, cool. I don't really want it as much anymore. But if you do, you have to kind of consider, well, like how much alcohol is okay. And so again, that's going to vary per individual, but generally alcohol is not conducive to building muscle and having a good, or I guess what is a relative term of good body composition. And if alcohol is starting to get in the way of your training, meaning you wake up the next day and you are super hungover, so maybe you push back your training and maybe, you know, you just don't end up getting to your session that day, or you have a really piss poor session because you're super hungover and you're doing that multiple times a week, multiple times a month, then alcohol is now getting in the way of your training, and it's also getting in the way of your recovery. So you're not going to be as effective as possible. And so that's when I might have another conversation with a client and say, hey, like, you know, we might need to reduce. Doesn't mean you have to stop, but we need to look at how this is affecting your goals. But if you are a fairly, you know, social drinker, like Marissa said, she doesn't really drink a whole lot. She'll have maybe one, maybe two drinks. And that's kind of like every now and then. So she also understands that like, hey, if I had a heavy leg day, I'm not going to pound alcohol today, because I'm
definitely not drinking.
I'm going to be miserable for the next couple days.
Yeah, or like more miserable, because I'll probably already be sore.
Right.
But yeah, that's a great point. And just the mindset behind it. And I think it really does come to light for a lot of people when, let's say, they do have macro targets and they do start tracking, and then they say, okay, well, I want to incorporate a drink and I'm going to practice doing this strategy. It really does come to light when you actually track your first drink, because you're like, oh shit, that's a lot. Like, that takes a lot out of my day.
And so,
yeah. And so it's like, it is kind of a big sacrifice to make when you are working it in. And so what is a good amount for you is relative to, okay, well, what does your total daily intake look like? Like, are you eating 1500 calories, or are you eating 3000? Like, that's two very different stories, right? On what, like, how many drinks could be acceptable within that. And then also having a good nutritious diet, because I have had clients who, you know, kind of abuse the system in a way, and we have to have conversations about that, where, you know, they're using 90% of their diet on weekends to have just alcohol and protein shakes or chicken breast, because they want to drink all day, but they also want to hit their macros. And, you know, that is in principle, the correct way to do that, but, like, is that conducive to actually, like, doing anything productive? No. So, like, that's, I think, just the way that you wrap your head around drinking, and just, like, as someone, this, I wrote this later on in the outline, but I'm going to jump to it, you know, as someone who's starting your journey, and this is the first time you're ever doing this, maybe you are a social drinker and you are starting a healthy lifestyle change. This is really foreign. This is different. You know, it's different than the culture that most people live in, especially, like, you know, coming out of a 4-year university and, you know, maybe there was a lot of drinking and partying involved. And that's what weekend life looks like for a lot of people. And then we bring that into our 20s and our 30s, making that change to, okay, now I see that, like, it really does kind of, you know, maybe you're a female who's more petite in a fat loss phase, you're not eating a ton of calories. And you see, it does need to be like a 1 or 2 drink kind of thing. That's a huge change. So it's a lot different wrapping your head around it as someone who's new to this than someone who is, you know, a fitness veteran like we are. And we've been doing this for years. And this is the life that we choose to live. So I guess one more note on alcohol that I wanted to, I guess, say is, just because, you know, let's say you're not tracking your macros, doesn't mean that you need to immediately drop everything, learn everything about tracking macros, and then incorporate alcohol this way. For someone who's not tracking, and maybe your lifestyle was drinking a lot on the weekends or multiple times per week before, it is still a healthy lifestyle change to go from that to reducing your intake slightly. Right. Whatever that means to you, right? So if you go from 5 nights a week of drinking at the bar after work every day to now exercising 3 times a week, and maybe you go to the bar once or twice, and, you know, your total amount for the week still goes down, and you're still getting more whole foods, you're still exercising more, and your total alcohol consumption is going down, that's still healthier. So, you know, we're talking about this with numbers and math and all of this, and that's for the people who really need to know how to do that. But also acknowledge that if you're just mindful of your alcohol intake and you're trying to cut back on it to better pursue your goals and manage your total intake with calories, that's awesome too.
Right. And so I think it's kind of the same thing when it comes to something like soda. Like, let's say you're someone who drinks a ton of soda. And so instead of cutting everything out and going cold turkey, and, like, because I think that's a lot harder of a transition than to go from drinking, like you said, if you drink 3 soft drinks a day, maybe just going to 2, or maybe just doing it a couple times a week instead of every single day. So it's definitely relative and based on each individual and what their alcohol preference is. And I think another thing, I like what you mentioned about, like, if you have a petite female who's going through a cutting phase, so let's say they're on, like, you know, maybe they're at their very, very end, you know, last month or two, and they're on like 150, 120 grams of carbs a day. So if you think about, if you have 1 or 2 drinks, maybe even 3, that could easily be 3/4 of your daily carbs. And so to think about your body and what it's doing, it has to be, it's trying to be as efficient as possible, but you're not giving it a whole lot of nutrients. So again, when this is how I approach it with my clients, if they are in a cutting phase, and Marissa, I know that you're very similar, that you take your cutting phases very seriously because you have a very specific goal and you don't want to kind of hang out in this limbo phase of I'm cutting, but I'm not really. And so just kind of like doing that get in, get out, like, hey, we might need to be a little bit more strict than normal, but we're only doing this for a short period of time. And then once we build your calories back up, it's okay to be a little bit more flexible, go out and have some drinks. And if you, you know, do want to go out and drink, that's fine. But 3/4 of your daily carbs towards alcohol is just not going to be conducive towards your goals.
Right, right. And so basically just making a context dependent decision on, right, is it going to be worth it? And what does it take out of your day? And where is the sacrifice there? And I laughed when you said that because it just makes me think of not this past year, but the year prior when we came to visit my dad out in New Mexico, and you came out to meet us, and you had to drive a long way to come there. And so it was like this whole day thing for you, but you were like at the very, very beginning of prep, and all we did was freaking brewery hop. So you had literally used up your entire day's worth of carbs, I believe. Like,
I don't think it was the entire day.
It was a lot of it. Because like we had
good at the beginning.
We had two or three places, I think, that we went to. But either way, I remember you saying that you had used like a very large chunk of your daily carbs for beer. And so I was just like laughing, thinking about that.
Yeah. And so that's generally why, like, in the majority of your prep, you don't drink alcohol. There are a lot of different reasons, but like, I was like, well, I'm kind of in this like limbo stage where like I have started prep, but like I'm not prep. It's like that pre-prep stage.
Yeah, and it was like a special day where like we don't get to see you often, so like I totally understood why. So like, you know, again, context dependent, right. Make the decision on if it's worth it. But in general, like if I'm cutting, like I'm probably not going to drink for like 95 to 100% of that dieting phase, because I have to get pretty low, and it's just not worth it, because I'd much rather eat my carbs, eat my fats. And so, like you were saying, like, if it's worth it to you to diet, commit, and just, you know, do what you need to do in order to see the results that you want. Can drinking be a part of that? Absolutely. But just, you know, learning how to make that a part of it, but be smart about it, is the more difficult part.
Yeah. And then I think that we could probably dive a little bit further into like, okay, well, I want to drink, or I'm going to drink. What can I have, or what is the smarter decision?
I was just going to say that.
Whoa, a nice transition, Christina. So, if you do have a client who says that, I think it comes down to a little bit of personal preference. Like, if you are going to drink, I don't want you to be miserable and like suffer through something you don't really enjoy drinking. But I think the easiest choice you can make is having just a clear liquor, or a straight liquor with something like club soda, diet soda, or like, I know that some people do those little Mios, like the flavored kind of sweetener things. Sometimes my husband and I will even do aminos. So we're well, I'm drinking, but I'm hydrating at the same time. So something like that, you're having just a clear liquor and then some sort of zero calorie drink, or even like, I know some people will do like just water and ice or something like that. So that is going to be probably one of the most low cal options that you can choose.
Right. Yeah. So like a 1 ounce pour of a liquor is usually 60 to 80 calories. So even less. And so, especially if you're drinking at home. Yeah. I've done BCAAs, specifically like Core ABC. They have a flavor called Crystal Cosmo, which is modeled after the Cosmopolitan drink. And I've had that with just like vodka and mixing it with like a little extra water. I remember at Sam and Pat's wedding, who both work for Core Nutritionals, they had America Energy, so like the zero-calorie energy drink and vodka behind the bar, and that was awesome. Diet Coke and Jack, or any kind of whiskey, is a good one. Some places have diet ginger ale that you can do a whiskey ginger ale. My personal go-to is a vodka club with extra lime, because without the extra lime, it's a little, but if you get enough lime in there, you know, you get the tangy more than you get the vodka. Truly's, White Claws, the hard seltzers that are 100 calories are all pretty good options. One thing that comes up a lot is like, what's better, like what's healthier, like the seltzers or a light beer? And like, everyone's like, oh, beer's so bad for you, like the White Claws are so much healthier, or whatever. Ultimately, with alcohol, it really just comes down to calories. So if a Bud Light is 95 calories, then, you know, it might be worth it to save those five. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a funny country boy parody like video I saw online, and he was like comparing White Claw to, I forget what his channel name is, but he's comparing White Claw to Bush Light. And he was like, well, Bush Light is 95 calories, but White Claw is 100. So clearly the healthier decision here is Bush Light.
He makes a good argument.
It was so funny. But, like, essentially, the point being, it does really just come down to calories and your preference. Yeah.
But you can, I mean, the amount of calories you can save going from just a zero cal sweetener or option versus the full sugary options that they have can make a huge difference. And so one of the big things is like a margarita. So yeah. The margarita mix is just packed with sugar. So not only do you now have the alcohol that you need to account for, but you're also having to account for the mixer. So you could easily have one drink that's 300, 400, 500, 600 calories for one drink. And so if you were to make the option to switch from like a light margarita where they're doing just like a little bit of the light mix, which might be only like maybe eight grams of carbs for, you know, the same amount, like you can save a ton. So I think that there are a lot of healthier options that you lower cal options that you can switch to when drinking alcohol.
Right. Yeah. And what was I going to say? Oh, and another one I thought of is sometimes if I'm feeling indulgent, I'll order a mojito with no simple syrup. And I'll actually like add in Splenda if they have it, and you can pretty much get the same thing, or you could just do it with no simple syrup if you can do that. But like, that's one where like you can get a little like actual like cocktail drink type thing. I don't know a ton more hacks with that. I know a ton for making them at home, like Crystal Light mixers, like the iced tea and lemonade and pink lemonade and diet cranberry juice. Like, I am all about that. Like, I remember last year I went to a friend's bachelorette party weekend. And I played bartender that weekend, and I just like loaded up on all the diet like stuff that I just listed. And everyone was so obsessed with all the drinks, and they had no idea that it was diet. Like, I just bought it and made it. And I was like, here you go, guys. Here's Cosmos. Here's a Long Island iced tea. Like, and they were just like all about it.
Yeah. I think the same thing. And so I've talked about before how I feel like I'm a mom and I always have snacks in my purse. Well, the other thing that I always carry in my purse is like the little stevia packets. So same thing. I went out to dinner with my mom, and it was like, I think you messaged me after this and told me I was a super basic white girl, but I had ordered a margarita on like Margarita Day, National Margarita Day or something like that. And I, same thing, I asked for no mixer, that the heavy syrup. And so they gave me a light margarita, and it was like very, very bitter. So I, you know, went into my purse and dug out the little stevia pack, and like, boom, sweetened it up, and I could tolerate it. But again, still very low calorie.
They also have the, you know, like the Mio squirters, they have stevia, like unflavored stevia for that too. Mm-hmm. So you could get like the liquid one too, if you wanted to mix it in. Cause I know for me, like mixing in sugar packets or like Splenda packets into cold drinks, like I hate like when it doesn't dissolve. I get so bothered when, especially in like coffee, I get very, very bothered. So like the liquid one I would prefer to buy if anyone else resonates with that.
Or they just don't care like me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that was a really good overview for alcohol. But you know, if you guys have any specific individual questions you want to reach out to us, let us know. We'll try to help you as best as we can, especially since we have bartender Marissa here.
I know, it's ironic with like how little I actually drink, but yes. I love getting creative. And when I like, if on that weekend I did drink, actually, well, I had, so I was actually, and if anyone from that party is listening,
was that Kristen's?
No,
it was last year.
Yeah, it was Chelsea's. But I made myself a drink for the first round, but then the second one I had just poured myself like diet cran and diet pink lemonade and pretended like there was vodka in it.
Classic Marissa.
But hey, if you play bartender, you can make yourself as much or as little as you want.
Yep.
But yeah, it's ironic, but it's a lot of fun to like go through, especially that section with like the flavored waters and the diet juices. Like, you could be really creative, so it could be a lot of fun, and you can make drinking low cal much, much easier.
And we've talked about this before, but I think we should make a little disclaimer as well, that if you don't drink, you don't need to feel pressured by anyone else to change or alter your decision. So I know that, you know, we gave Marissa a little bit of shit when she was here, but at the end of the day, that's her decision. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to like peer pressure her or anything like that. And so if you don't want to drink or if you want to pretend, like I used to do this in prep, I'd walk around with a club soda and lime. So everyone thought I was drinking, but I wasn't. And then you don't hear from anyone the rest of the night. But if you're sitting there with no drink or you just have a water in your hand, you'll hear it from everyone. So that's my, like, kind of like you were saying, that's my little tip, is just like a little club soda with lime. No one will say anything else.
I've done that way too many times to count as well. So yeah. For sure. Like it's really hard too. Like, and this kind of goes with, okay, let's say, man, like there's a lot to say about alcohol, but like, let's say, okay, you've started this healthy lifestyle change or you've started a diet or whatnot. And you, for whatever reason, have decided that you just don't want to partake. Like you just don't want to drink. And that is perfectly okay. Like Christina said, how do you stick with that? Like it's very, very hard to, you know, just not succumb to peer pressure, especially if it's not something that you're practiced in doing. So if we can encourage you guys, like if that's a decision you want to make, you know, stand by that and try your best to just stand firm in it. Ultimately, if you just keep saying no, people will give up and move on. And, you know, anything that people do say towards you that's negative or putting you down for making that decision. And this goes with any healthy lifestyle change in general. People who ridicule you really are doing that out of insecurity. And it can show you like who your true supporters are and who is really just operating out of jealousy or envy or insecurity. So, you know, stand by your decisions, and it can show you a lot about yourself, and it can show you a lot about others too.
Yeah. So if you want a longer winded version of that, you can go listen to episode 11. And that is all about support from significant others, friends, and things like that. So that's a much longer episode, but it dives deep into things that you can do to kind of like combat that or talk to other people in your life about your decisions.
Good plug. And we are 3 times the way past that episode, which is crazy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, 33. 1/3 of the way to 100.
Wow. And we just hit 8,000 plays, I think.
Wow.
On the podcast. So I'm excited once we hit 10K.
Yeah. That you know, that's funny because my goals for 2021 are up on my wall behind my screen. And one of the goals was to hit or surpass 10,000 plays on the podcast by the end of this year. And it's June 30th. So that's pretty freaking cool.
We just told the listeners at the beginning it was July 6th. They're going to be so confused listening to this podcast.
Open your phone and make sure you know what day it is when you're tuning out of this podcast. Yeah. Too much time travel.
Okay. All right. Let's get into going out food. To eat food and social.
Yes. Events. Yes. So, okay. So when it comes to, I guess we'll do the same kind of progression here. We'll cover tracking food, and then we'll cover just general healthy lifestyle changes and orders and swaps that you can make in order to manage eating out in a healthy way, depending on what healthy means in your context. Actually, do you want to lead off with that example that you were telling me off air? Before we get into it.
Yeah. So Marissa and I were catching up a little bit, and we were talking about my dad and stepmom coming to visit. And I was saying that my stepmom and my mom are pretty similar when it comes to, I guess, maybe their perception of eating out. And I think it's not just them, but I think a lot of women in general feel the same way. So when my mom came to visit me, I think it was last summer, we had gone out to a restaurant, and we are huge foodies, and so we love splitting and trying different things, and we're very similar with what we like to order. So it's just like we're the perfect restaurant buddies. Like we go, we're like, what do you want to order? What do you want to order? We're splitting this, boom. And so that's what we kind of do, and we don't ever really get huge entrees, and if we do, we're splitting it with something else. And I think at the time she had maybe like a beer, and then I might have had a glass of wine. I can't remember. And then I was just showing her around the town. So we went from there to another winery, ironic because we're talking about alcohol as well. And we shared a flight. There wasn't anything there that really like appealed to us. So we just had a flight. And so it's what, maybe like 1 or 2 ounces per pour. I think it was like 5 or 6 different wines. And so we tried a bit and we were like, all right, well, we're going to go home. And so it was kind of like a early dinner, late lunch, and later in the evening, because I eat all the time, I was like, hey, Mom, like, what do you want for dinner? And she was like, dinner? Like, no, we can't have dinner. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She's like, no, that lunch was bad. We ate so much. And I was like, no, we didn't. And she was like, yes, we did. Like, we had alcohol. And I was like, give me your phone. And so I was like, this is what you ate for breakfast, right? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, you had like an egg white omelet with vegetables. Okay. And I was like, plugged everything in. I overestimated what we had out at the 2 different restaurants. And I showed her phone. I was like, Mom, you've had like 900 calories to eat today. And she's like, really? I was like, yes. And I was like, look, and I showed her everything that we ate that was accounted for. And I was like, Mom, I even overestimated. And she was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll have a smoothie. I was like, okay. I was like, I mean, at that point, I don't care what you're eating. Like, she's getting some additional calories in. And I made sure I put like protein powder in it and things like that. But I think that sometimes we have a misconception and when it comes to eating out and what we can or can't order or what is healthy, what's not healthy. And so again, what Marissa and I say all the time is you can't manage what you don't measure. I said it right this time, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's kind of the idea of tracking. So you, in order to track your food, you have a better idea of what you're actually consuming, how to alter your habits based on the food and where your macros are, where your calories are, and things like that. So if she hadn't tracked her food that day, she wouldn't have eaten dinner because she felt so much guilt from going out. Whereas now she saw what she ate and she's like, oh, I actually have way more that I can eat. And even though mentally it was still hard for her to comprehend, she ended up eating dinner that night. And so I like this with my clients, and they feel this way too, tracking macros. They're like, I thought this would be more restrictive, but it's actually given me more freedom than I thought, that I can go out to eat, have a good time with my husband or my girlfriends and eat whatever, but within reason, not feel deprived, not feel like they're missing out, and then going home and either sometimes having to eat more because they still have to reach their goals, or they just feel satisfied. They don't feel bloated. They don't feel like they have this one opportunity only where they can eat whatever they want and then they're not going to have it again for another, you know, couple of weeks or so. So I think it is important if you're not going to track for years and years and years, just track for a little bit and get a really good idea of what you can and can't kind of get away with in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like, depending on your context too, this is why I like to have clients work through different phases. So, you know, we go through a maintenance phase, or we go through a reverse diet, or we go through a fat loss phase, because those are all different looking in terms of context. So like, when you go out to eat, what does that look like when you are just maintaining? What does that look like for you if you are trying to lose weight or if you're just trying to build muscle? Those all look very different. And so I think it's very important to definitely track at some point in your life if this is stuff that interests you and you want to be able to make progress towards your goals. But do it through multiple phases, because oftentimes I find that a lot of people are familiar with being very regimented and tracking a lot of stuff when they're cutting, but they have no idea how to do it when they're maintaining, and they don't maintain because they don't know how. So practicing it and making sure that you can actually just live life and maintain your weight at a place that is pretty comfortable for you. Like, okay, maybe you want to lose a little bit of body fat or 5 pounds or whatever, something super arbitrary. But like, if you're generally comfortable and happy in your body and you're able to maintain your weight with a good healthy intake, like, I'm not talking 1500 calories, like I'm talking 2000 plus for women and probably 2500 plus for men, so you know, something that is very manageable and flexible. And so like you said, when I have a client start with me, they're like, oh, this whole like macro tracking thing, so overwhelming, like I feel like I'm gonna hate it, like I've hated tracking in the past, da 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 da. And I'm like, just try it, like just give it like 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden they're like, I'm never hungry. I'm eating everything I want. I had burgers last night. I had pizza last week, and I feel better than I ever have. And I'm like, okay. See, when you have like a non-restrictive approach, you're not starving yourself. This can actually be, eating out can be a regular part of your life. And it's funny we're talking about this because my boyfriend Aaron and I actually had just talked about starting to try to limit our eating out, because like I am the queen of eating out, and we are like literally we would eat out multiple times per week on like weekdays, like, you know, run to Chipotle because we're too lazy to cook dinner, you know, have a date night on the weekend, and weekends in general we would eat out multiple times. And it's just been very heavy on our wallets and our waistlines. And so because every single time you do eat out, and we will kind of talk about this, there is an amount of uncertainty of, you know, you could be underestimating, you could be overestimating. You're going to do your best, of course, and we have to be able to do that and be okay with it. But ultimately, if we want to be truly, truly consistent, we do have to know what we're putting in our bodies. So finding the balance between that is very important. So depending on who you are, what your goals are, and what's important to you, you might have a different eating out frequency than someone else. And so we went for, I don't know, probably the past 3 years eating out like that. And it's been great. I've been able to reach my goals. You guys have seen my progress over the past almost three years now with him and the lifestyle that we've had. But we actually have just discussed committing to doing like one cheaper meal out and like one date night meal out per week. And that's going to be it for like just a couple of months, just to like save up some extra money and like eat from home more and get into a better routine. So we're actually really both excited about that. But anyways, getting into, okay, how do you actually track your food when you eat out? I'm going to go simple.
Lots of different methods that you can do.
Right, right. So I'm going to go simple first. Chain restaurants. If it's a Chipotle, if it's a Chick-fil-A, if it's Olive Garden, I don't know. Like anything with a name that is across the country, or at least across a region or a state that has nutrition facts online. Most chains will have, first of all, they'll probably have a nutrition calculator on their website. Like I know a lot of the bigger chains do, like the McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King. I know Chipotle does. And so they'll have calculators where you can actually like plug in your order and it'll tell you like a nutrition label, like what the macros on your meal are. So that's super easy. You can also just search like Chipotle menu on MyFitnessPal and it'll come up with all the menu items there too. So you can basically pick and plug what you want from there. So what I suggest with this, and the main error that I see when it comes to the chains, is oftentimes when we are doing this and we're ordering, we are making some substitutions or some swaps, or, you know, we're going no sour cream, or we're going, you know, extra meat, or, you know, no rice or this and that, right? And so if we search burrito bowl with chicken and we plug in the first entry that comes up as burrito bowl with chicken, we have no idea what the heck the macros for that are accounting for. So it's important for those chain restaurants, especially when they have stuff from their menu on there, like piece by piece, just go ingredient by ingredient. So I'm going to use Chipotle because it's such an easy example. Like the chicken, the rice, the fajita vegetables, the corn, like just go through it the same way you would order it and plug it in that way with estimations for your portions. The only other thing I will say about chains is that places that have their nutrition facts online have it for a certain portion size. I will tell you, the number of times I've gotten what looks like the actual portion size in my bowl at places like that, or, you know, on my plate in places like that, very slim. Usually it's a big honking scoop and it is usually a lot more than what the serving size is. So this is where we use our knowledge from what we eat at home and what we weigh on our food scale to practice, okay, that looked like a hell of a lot more than 4 ounces of rice. I'm going to track that as 6 ounces or 8 ounces or however much it looked like they packed in there to you. Is it going to be perfect? No. But what, like I just said, there is a certain amount of error that we have to accept when we're eating out and just trying to do our best and overestimating so that we're, you know, covering our error if we can, is the best thing that we can do. And ultimately that has to be good enough because we are just trying our best to live this lifestyle. Our body doesn't know if it was exactly what we tracked or not. Our body knows that we are staying accountable. And the example I always like to use is if, say, you know, you went to Chipotle, you tracked your food, and, you know, you said, okay, this looked like 6 ounces of rice, but maybe it was actually 8 ounces of rice, and you misestimated it. Oh no, you are actually 20 grams of carbs over what you thought you were. Is your body going to shut down and just like immediately start storing fat because your app doesn't match up with what you ate? No, absolutely not. Like, and if you did that, instead of saying, I don't know how to track Chipotle, fuck it, I'm going to just get a double bowl with extra guac and extra sour cream and cheese, and then all of a sudden you're, you know, 500, 600, 700 calories over your daily target, it's a heck of a lot better, right? The first scenario. So what we're trying to do here is keep you accountable by plugging stuff in and getting a rough idea of where you're at, and you can finish off your day as best possible. It doesn't matter if it's perfect, because ultimately your consistency with your best guessed estimations is going to be the best thing that you can do for your goals. That was really long.
Yes.
On chains. So I'm going to let you take non-chains so that you can have some audio in here.
So yeah, that was a really thorough explanation of chain restaurants. But so let's say you go to like a mom and pop restaurant or something like that, and they don't have any sort of nutritional information online. So let's say there are a couple different options that you can do before you even start tracking your food. So you can go one of two routes. And this is typically what Marissa and I will do, is we will track something that is easily trackable. And what I mean by that is you might order something like a lean protein. So either a fish or chicken or a leaner steak, and it will come with a side of vegetables, or it'll come with a potato, or it'll come with rice, something like that. So everything is kind of separated, your carbs, fats, and proteins for the most part. You might ask for no butter, no oil, no sauces, or if you do, can I get that on the side? So when you have your meal and it's put down in front of you, you have a pretty good idea of how to estimate everything. You can see the ingredients for the most part, and it's easy to track. If you go the other route and you go with something that's not easy to track, that might be like a casserole or a pasta dish or something where it's like all the ingredients are kind of mashed up. There's a lot of sauce, there's a lot of butter, oil, and it's kind of like, okay, well, this is, how do I track this? Because it's going to be hard to break everything down individually. So first, I kind of want to go into, so you ordered this meal that's easily trackable. So you have kind of three different options. So you can, number one, you could search chicken, rice, and vegetables, and you could just track whatever comes up, kind of like Marissa said with the burrito bowl. You can track whatever it comes up, but that's not going to be 100% or the more accurate version, but you might have, at least you track something, right? So the second option that you can do is you can estimate your calories. So you look down and you say, you know what, that's probably 40 grams of protein, that might be 50 grams of carbs, and maybe 10 grams of fat. And so you're kind of estimating it with your macros, and that is okay. I mean, there's no right or wrong. Or you could try to plug in each individual ingredient. So, okay, looking down, that might be 5 ounces of chicken, maybe 6 ounces. That's about a half a cup of rice, and the vegetables, broccoli. So I'm going to track half a cup of broccoli or something like that. So those are kind of the three different options that you can do. And you can do the exact same thing with the not easily trackable thing. So let's say you get a lasagna. So you can search MyFitnessPal and look for lasagna. But again, it's extremely general. You don't know the portion sizes. You don't know any of the ingredients that went into it. Or you could try to break it down again by ingredient. Like, there are some lasagna noodles, there's tomato sauce, there's cheese, there's ground beef. And you can kind of try to do it that way as best you can. Or again, you look down and say, you know what, this is probably 80 carbs, 15 fat, and 30 grams of protein. So I don't know if there's any right or wrong. I think that there is something more things that are more accurate and things that are less accurate. So searching for a generic term in MyFitnessPal, you're going to get a fairly generic answer for what your macros are going to be. So I think it's a little bit easier to try to estimate macros. And this is, I think, tends to be a little bit more for our more advanced trackers where they can look down. It's kind of like the matrix where all you're seeing is protein, carbs, and fats. But being able to do that. Or I think what's a little bit easier is breaking everything down by ingredient and trying to estimate portion size as best as you can.
Yeah, I would say a good rule of thumb is if you can pick the meal apart with your eyes, then track it ingredient by ingredient. So like if you get a steak, rice, and veggies, like that is very easy to track one piece at a time. But if it is that lasagna or casserole or pasta dish or something that's just a big jumble, I would say the easier option is to go with like searching up that food item as a whole. And like, you know, say it's not even a mom and pop shop, but just homemade stuff or like ethnic food. That's where things people can get really confused. But like that counts kind of as eating out. You know, you go over to your mom's for a cookout or whatnot. And that kind of stuff is there. And you're like, I have no idea how to track this. What I would suggest in MyFitnessPal, the reason why we suggest that app for our clients, because they actually have a good variety and a really good database for even stuff that is like ethnic and foreign. I've been able to find a number of Korean dishes and soups that I didn't think I would on there. I don't know if they're 100% accurate, but again, it's about tracking something versus nothing. So if you find, you know, the soup that you're having and, you know, you don't know if it's 100% accurate, but, you know, it says it's 20 grams of fat and 50 grams of carbs and this protein or whatever, then like, cool. At least you accounted for something that takes a chunk out of your day and keeps you accountable. And so that's what I would suggest for the stuff that like really is like, I'm not going to try to break this down. Because it's just overwhelming. And the last thing that I would add to that is using chain restaurant entrees for non-chains. So like if you go to an Italian restaurant and you get, I don't know, spaghetti and meatballs or a lasagna, go use like Olive Garden's from their nutrition calculator. Because like at least you know like they calculated what a lasagna is for them. Maybe it's comparable, maybe it's not. And that way you can have some amount of confidence that like the ratio of macros in that dish are probably similar.
Yeah. And again, there's no right or wrong. There might be some that are just a little bit more accurate, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be. And so we've talked about this before, but with our clients, you know, we don't tell them to not go out to dinner. If anything, we do want them to, because it's not realistic to stay home and hermit, that you have to go out, go into the real world and try your skills. And the more you do it, the better you're going to be, the more comfortable it's going to be. And again, like Marissa was saying, maybe you're not 100% accurate, but you're doing your best. And if you do that, it's better than saying fuck it and going completely overboard. And I mean, it's the other thing too, and we've talked about this before, is the more flexible you are, the less accurate you're going to be. So if you're eating out for every single meal, there's a chance you're probably not going to be hitting your macros spot on. And then with the other side of that, if you're staying home and you're cooking every single one of your meals and you're tracking everything to the gram, yeah, you're going to be very, very, very accurate, but you're not going to have much of a social life. So again, trying to find that middle ground where you are being accurate, but you are allowing some amount of flexibility into your life.
Right. And then to get into the conversation of like balance again, you know, how does that fluctuate and change depending on what you're doing? So in a time frame, so this is where like my example actually is relevant, is, you know, we're dialing back eating out a little bit right now because that makes sense for our budget and what we're trying to do right now for ourselves. But in a time frame where we're traveling a lot or there's a lot of social events going on, and I know for a lot of people right now with restrictions being lifted, the conversation that I'm having with a lot of clients is, there's so many things that I am invited to and am going to now that, you know, I wasn't doing during lockdown. How the heck do I manage all of this? And so this is a big conversation that's actually been happening recently with people. So, you know, just knowing that there are phases to life. Like, so, you know, the next 6 months or this summer and this early fall might be really busy because of the state of the world in that way, but it's going to die down. Like, it's going to get back to a quote unquote normal amount of social events. And then you might enter a time frame where, you know, you really want to hunker down and enter a really, you know, aggressive cutting phase or a contest prep. Okay, well, that means eating out and social events and stuff. You're going to have to make some more sacrifices. Maybe that doesn't mean you don't go, but you might not be partaking in the food or the drink quite as much. And then, you know, it cycles. So, you know, there's a phase of more and there's a phase of less. And so it's important to know that you can incorporate eating out and drinking in any context, but the amount of which you indulge can fluctuate depending on the context. And really just figuring out that balance as you go, because ultimately you're never going to have it, you know, perfectly figured out and then have things be that way forever, right? Like, you're not going to be like, we're going to eat out once a week and we're going to eat out once a week for the rest of our lives. And like, it doesn't work that way, right? And so it's like we figure something out, and sometimes it feels like once you, like, you know, you do all this work to figure something out and then life changes. And then you do all this work to figure it out again, and the life changes. And that's kind of just the way that it goes. And so just understanding those ebbs and flows and learning how to just better live the lifestyle as the context changes is really, really important.
Right. And so I think that might look like, I'm taking you, Marissa, as an example. So you are traveling here soon. And so generally when you travel, you eat out a little bit more. So yeah. If Marissa and Aaron knew that that was going to be happening, maybe this week they're like, hey, well, you know what? Let's actually, instead of going out, let's skip that and have a date night at home, because we're going to be traveling and we're going to be going out a lot more than normal. So this week, even though we talk about going out to eat once or twice a week, we'll just stay home this week. And that's okay, because we're going to be going out a little bit more than normal.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we did last weekend.
I'm sure you did, because we would have the same methods.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's perfect.
Yeah. So I know that I plugged that episode earlier for 11, which is the social events. And well, it's more so how to deal with significant others, family members, friends who don't support your goals. But I think that is a good transition to talk about social events, because I think they kind of go hand in hand, whereas this is going to be a little bit more, here are some specific strategies you can use and utilize when you are at social events. But I think that that would be a good one to listen to before, if you do have people who are not supportive of your goals.
Right, right. Well, maybe not before, because they're listening to this now and they're 55 minutes in.
True, 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 true.
Unless, well, they can time travel like they have been this whole episode.
After this episode, they're gonna be like, oh my god, why am I listening to them?
Who knows, maybe we just have like a new niche that we've unlocked.
Yeah, we have such great senses of humor. So yeah, so kind of the mindset around social events and the strategy. And so again, I think we actually just covered it a little bit, is like, we don't want you guys to hermit. We want you to go out, we want you to experience things, we want you to continue honing those skills and becoming more comfortable with those social events. And so we did talk a little bit about food and drink and what you can do. And I think the same kind of principle applies. And it might be a tiny bit different, because I have had clients that are like, hey, you know, Christina, I didn't know what to do because I had so many little things here and there. I had some crackers with cheese and salami, and then I had some macaroni salad, and then I had a half of a burger, and then I had chips, and I had a soda. And so they're like, how do I track that? And I would not want to do that either. I wouldn't want to track, okay, I had, how many crackers did I have? I had this many chips, I had two pieces of cheese. And so I think it's a little bit easier to just be like, kind of just give yourself, you know what, let me just kind of estimate like 100 carbs, maybe like 25 fat and 40 protein or something like that. And just kind of saying, I'm just kind of, I don't know, feel for it and just kind of feel like, if I overeat, I overeat a little bit. If I undereat, I undereat. But at least I've kind of accounted for those calories. And again, same thing, I might have had more fat and I might have had less carbs and vice versa. But at least I'm accounting for a good chunk of calories for that day.
Right. It's like you're taking that chunk out. You're like, okay, I'm not touching that anymore because like I just ate a bunch. Yeah, totally. And I think numbers aside, kind of getting into, okay, well, how do we better order? And like, this is my specialty, the order smarters, the posts that I do on Instagram. But no, in all seriousness, like, okay, what if I don't care about macros? You know, we did this for alcohol too. Like, what can I do? What are some strategies I can implement when out to make it easier to actually hit my numbers and just order smarter so that it's not this big hassle to like try to guess like how much oil did they use on my this or how much fat was in that or whatnot, and just making it a little bit more manageable. So some of the tips that I like to suggest are really just universal, like making your orders healthier and easier and lower calorie to track and manage, and just, you know, not be over consuming in general. And so that the kind of like rules of thumb are, if you're ordering something that is on the grill or, you know, on the stove, you can ask for it cooked without butter or oil. I do this pretty often. It is awkward at first, and you might get a little bit of confusion depending on who the waiter or waitress is, but it is something that you can do and that most places will accommodate very easily. You can, if you're, say, getting a salad or something that has a lot of toppings on it, you can ask for that stuff on the side. So I know, like, at Mexican places, like, they might have a cheese sauce that they put all over the entree. You can ask for that on the side. You can ask for the salad dressing on the side. You can ask for no cheese. You can ask for no sour cream, or put it on the side for me. And then that way you can kind of use it sparingly. And so, like, let's say 2 tablespoons of ranch dressing is like, I don't know, 15 grams of fat or maybe more. It's pretty heavy stuff. And so if you don't necessarily need all of that, you don't have to use it. Personally, I love when I'm having a salad to like get the stuff on my fork and I'll dip into the dressing instead of pouring it all over. I'm probably missing a bunch. You can order a baked potato plain instead of with all the loaded toppings. What else am I missing?
I think those are all really, really good ones. And I would just say that there are so many different food allergies and different ways of eating nowadays that I...
Gluten-free, vegan.
Right. And so people who are asking, is there any dairy in that, you know, all of those things. So don't feel awkward if you ask for your dressing on the side or if you ask for something to be cooked a very specific way. And because I'm sure that these waiters, waitresses deal with this all day long. But I would just say, if you do have a pretty complicated order, to tip your server as well. So just a little PSA, because you don't want to be a dick and then give them like no money. So just tip them.
Oh, but always. Especially when I'm like, if I'm cutting and I'm like, can I get, and here's my Texas Roadhouse order is like either the petite, fillet or the 6-ounce sirloin, and I get that cooked dry, no mushrooms, onions on top, sweet potato baked plain as can be. Always ask for a salt shaker if they don't have it on the table already, and just coat that shit, and then the veggies steamed with no butter. And yeah, we tip a lot when I do that.
I mean, if you are, and it's not that you're being complicated, it's just that if they accommodate you, then Just be nice.
And so, like, again, you know, if I'm cutting, I'm doing all of that. But if I'm not, I might get, you know, some extras with that, or I might not be so strict with that. So, again, context dependent. But yeah, just in general, like, and the other thing that I was going to say is most places, especially if it's just like a pub or a bar or a American style restaurant, or like just like a restaurant that has a big menu, every single freaking place has a grilled chicken entree or a grilled chicken sandwich or like white fish. Like, and if you are really, you know, down to it and grinding really hard, like, and you know, maybe your calories are really low or something like that, you can always just get, you know, the grilled chicken entree or the grilled fish, the market price, whatever, and ask for that cooked dry. And that's usually like, if you have no idea what to order and the menu is really like just overwhelming you. And we also recommend, if you are really committed to your goals at a specific time, look up menus in advance.
But, like, that's a good go-to, like, no matter where you're at.
Right. And so I think, again, that's a little bit different because when you go out to a restaurant, generally you are in control of the food that you're going to be having. Whereas if you go to a social event, like a social event, if you go to a social event and you just kind of have whatever is there and that's kind of it. So one of the things I think that we've talked about before, and these are some of the things I've told my clients, is you don't want to be that person that shows up and has their Tupperware of chicken, broccoli, and rice, and they don't eat anything that's there. And yes, you are probably going to be super accurate with your food. But something that I like to do so I can still partake in the event and not feel like a weirdo or not feel like I can't enjoy myself is I will bring a dish that everyone can eat. And so I like to bring something maybe like a salad. So I know that sometimes I've gone to events and there's literally not a vegetable in sight. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So I like to bring a big salad, or I'll bring like a chicken salad and I'll make it a little bit healthier. So I know that there is something I can eat that is going to be a little quote unquote healthier or lower in calories. And I can still enjoy other things and still eat some of the whatever was brought. But I also know that I have something that's going to make me not starving by the end of the social event and ready to eat everything that's there. And then the other thing that you can do too is, and again, I've done this before just because I like to eat, is I'll bring a protein bar or something, or I'll have a protein shake beforehand. So I'm not super hungry by the time I get there. I could eat because, again, I can always eat. and I also like to bring carbonated drinks, or if most barbecues, when you go to there, they have something, but I like to have a diet soda or an energy drink or something like that, just because it's something that I don't have very often. So it's like an indulgence for me. So I'll have something like that. So I still feel like I'm like, ooh, I get to enjoy this and not just eat, you know, the dessert table. Cause again, I could do that if I wanted to.
Yeah. Like you could come to a party with a case of Coke Zero or Diet Coke or Sprite Zero. Like, and I love that too, because like I will go through cans of that, like at any, like, even if I'm not even, if I don't give a crap for the day and I'm eating whatever I want, I will still drink one or two or maybe more diet sodas throughout the course of a full day if it's like a all day thing. So like that's a good one because it's no calories and it's, you know, carbonated, so it might fill your stomach up a little bit. But I'm right there with you on just bringing a dish that you can have a little bit more of, and you know, like you made it, maybe it's higher in protein, you know, maybe it'll keep you fuller for longer, or maybe it's just a veggie tray so that like you can have something with some fiber, and you know, working that in with everything else. And I think that is, yeah, just like the strategies for social events, I'm really glad we touched on.
Yeah. Do we have anything else? I'm looking at our outline, but I feel like we covered a lot of it. We talked about travel in what episode was that?
Something 28? Recently.
I think it was 28.
Yeah. So that's a good one for like actual road trips and flights and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So again, but just staying on track when you're not in your normal routine.
Yeah. And a lot of this carries over to it too, because it's just like you have to be okay with a certain amount of uncertainty, and just doing your best. And that really is what you want to walk away with. And the expectation I will leave off with this is the expectation that I always try to set with my clients, especially if they're new and they're just starting this. You know, they're already overwhelmed with the fact that they have to track all their food. And so they're like, oh, by the way, it's week two and I have this trip this weekend. Like, any tips? And they're probably expecting me to be like, stick to it. Like, see ya. But in reality, I try to really sit down the expectation that, hey, like, I understand that this is new to you, you're struggling, or maybe you just don't feel, maybe it's not new to you, but you just don't feel all that confident that like you can hit your macros while you're traveling. Guess what? Most people can't. Even I have a lot of trouble doing that still, because traveling is just, it's difficult to manage. And the expectation that I want you to have for this trip is I want you to make choices that make you feel good about how you ate and how you drank. And I actually just had a client come back and she checked in on Monday and absolutely made my day about this, because she was like, I went on a 4-day trip, you know, and it was the first time that I had traveled since everything shut down last year. I got to see all my girlfriends, and like, normally when normally when I go to the airport, I get like this burger and fries from this place that I really love. I didn't get it, and I just got like this veggie wrap that I thought looked good from a different place. And then we went to this Mexican restaurant, and normally I get like the full like array of everything with rice and beans, but I just got ceviche and had a drink, and I felt really good about that. And she was just so happy with how she handled the experience. And I was like, that's what I want. Right. I want you to walk away from a social event, travel, eating out, knowing that you made a choice that's conducive to your goals. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just being mindful of, am I stopping when I'm full? Am I eating when I'm hungry? Am I ordering something because I feel guilty and like I've already messed up? Or am I ordering something because I actually want to eat it and I think it'll taste good and make me feel good about my choices? Did I, you know, and so like all of those things, but trying to set the expectation with yourself that like these situations are not going to be that perfect to the T, to the gram day. But if you can walk away saying, I don't feel guilty, I feel really good about what I ordered, I feel really good about how I drank, that is a huge, huge win.
Right. And it's funny that you say that, because I have a client who very, very similar. And I was thinking about some of the examples that she had given to me for some that I used today in the podcast. But same thing, that she eats out a lot and has a lot of social events, but the changes that she's made from going out to eat, and same thing, she's like, you know, we went to a Mexican restaurant and I got fajitas, but instead of drowning myself in chips and queso, like I had a couple chips, and instead of having 5 margaritas, you know, I had one, or, and it was a light one, and I walked away and felt really good, and I didn't feel full and disgusting. Like, I just felt proud of myself and my choices. And she's like, I probably went over a little bit, but I'm still happy with my experience going out to eat. And it's the same thing that you said. It's not being perfect. We're not going to yell at them for not hitting their macros. We're like, awesome, good job. Like, let's keep it up. Let's go into next week. Because those little, and they may seem little, but, and they're pretty big, they're pretty significant, but those changes every single time you go out to a restaurant, those add up. And that's, again, what we preach is that healthy lifestyle. So it's not just, you know, a 3-month, 4-month, 6-month, 12-month program, however long, and then once you're done, okay, you can go back to normal. It's no, these are the habits that you can implement for the rest of your life to live that healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's permanent changes, and making that something that actually feels good and sustainable for you.
Sustainable results. Yes.
Love it.
Well, if it is July 6th or July 4th or it's June 30th, whatever day it is for you, we hope that you enjoy this episode. I don't think I have anything else to add. I think that was a really good one.
Yeah, me neither. We covered the outline and we covered well beyond it. So that makes me really happy. And hopefully you guys really get a lot from this episode.
Yeah, agreed. So we will catch you guys next time. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you haven't already, please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. You can find both of us on Instagram. You can find me at Christy Lynn Fit and Marissa is at Marissa Roy Fitness. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you back next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something from it. Please remember that Christina and I are not medical professionals, so if you're going to make any changes to your exercise or nutrition routines, please consult with your doctor or medical team first. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how this podcast moves up the ranks and becomes accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next Tuesday here at the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast.